But the Mishnah bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph 17a, Ketzad HaRegel. And Ketzad HaRegel is very unusual. I'm not an expert in all of the Mishnayot, but I can't remember lots of contexts where one chapter sort of links to what's gone on. Usually there's more of a divide between one chapter and the next. But this first line, Ketzad HaRegel Muedes L'Shamar Pederech Hilucha, is a direct quote from the previous Mishnah in the previous chapter. I think on Tess Vav Amud Beis, so 15b, we said the same thing. And then it's basing it on that. So how does that work, right? How is it that Regel, which again is one of the Avot, right? One of the primary categories of Nezek, of damages. How exactly does it work to be liable, right? How is it considered to be a muad, liable in the fullest sense? B'derech hilucha. That's the answer. It is done l'shaber b'derech hilucha, in that it breaks something as it is walking. So again, the animal is walking along, and its foot will break something as it is going, and the owner will be liable for that damage that is caused. Habahema muedes lahalich kedarcha l'shaber. Again, an animal is considered to be a muad to walk and to cause damage. Now, the lines, those two lines in the Mishnah sound very, very similar. They are very similar, and that's the first question of the Gemara, so we'll get to that. The Gemara is puzzled by what exactly sounds very repetitive, right? We say, regel is, this type of damage is, and we've said in the past, again, regel doesn't mean only that part of the animal, although it might do in this context. So it sounds very, very similar. Regel is more to break something as it walks and to be liable, and behema, an animal, is liable. So sounds basically the same thing. Okay, hoisam mevaetes. Let's say it was trampling on something, right, and it did cause damage as a result. Osha hoyu tsroros menatzin mitachas ragleha, or that stones, pebbles, were shooting out from under its foot. Then v'shibra esakelim, and those smashed other utensils right elsewhere. Then mashalem chatzi nezek. So mevaetes, those two are a little bit different, right? If you look in Rashi clarifies ha'isam mevaetes. That's about seven lines down in the Rashi. He says ha'isam mevaetes shinuihu. That's something which is unusual, and that's referring to v'tolda de keren. This is now referring to a subcategory of Keren, and that's why it is chatzi nezek. Hilka chatzi nezek basulo, that's why it's only half damages. But tsroros is a little bit of a different thing. The pebbles shooting out, then he says afal gav de lav shinuihu ela urchihu. That's normal, right? It's normal for an animal to be walking along and kick up pebbles as it's walking. That's very normal. Mevaetes is like an intentional, the animal sort of sees something and goes for it and intends to stamp on your on your utensil. So that's unusual, and that's why it's Keren, and therefore you pay half damages. So what about Tsuros? That is normal. So yet still, you pay full damages. I'm not going to read the rest of Rashi, because it gives away a lot of what's coming in the Gemara right now. But we'll go through exactly why, but just to explain that although they're lumped together in that line of the Mishnah, they are fundamentally quite different, those two, what we would call the mechayev, the liability, the source of the liability, comes from very different places in those two cases. Dorsa, so now the fifth, in the middle of the fifth line of the Mishnah, Dorsa al hakli, v'shibarto, v'nofal al hakli, v'shovro. So then, let's say the animal lay down or sat, basically. Caused a utensil to be broken, right, with its weight, and v'nofal al kli, and then that fell on another utensil, v'shibro, and broke the second utensil, al harishon mishalem nezek shalem. The first one you pay full damages, and the second one you pay v'al ha'acharon, and the second one, the latter one, mishalem chatzi nezek, you pay half damages for that one. Okay, so difference between the already now we're getting a better sense of what's going on in this Mishnah. between half damages and full damages. Again, even though it's very normal, seems to be, there's a difference between something which is direct and something which is indirect. Okay, so we'll come, and that's going to be the theme, basically, of this Mishnah and the Gemara based on this Mishnah. And again, we'll take questions and thoughts when we get to the end of Mishnah, if anybody has any comments. So, Mishalim Nezek Shalim, Vala Acharim Mishalim Chatzi Nezek, those are the last two lines, so again, the wide lines now, Hatar Nagolim, chickens, Muadin Lahalech Kadarkon, they are considered to be Muad, it's very normal for them to walk around, Ula Shaber, and to break things, you know, as they're simply wandering, Hoya Delil Kosher Baraglov, but let's say there was a small basket, or a small sort of bucket of sorts, attached to its leg, then Oshahaya Mahades Umashaber was sort of dancing around in an unusual way, Umashaber Sakalim, and through that it broke utensils, then Mashalim Khadzinezek, then that would be considered that then that would be half damages, right? Then that would be half damages. And again Rashi explains Mishalim Chatzinezek again to Delil Hainu Tzroros. So that's the last last Rashi, three lines from the end, just clarifies that anything that is attached to the animal's leg is considered to be effectively the same thing as a pebble shooting out from under the cow, right, or from under any other animal. So the cow walking along shoots out a pebble is the halachic equivalent from a chicken who has something attached to it, right, or something external to it. Now that might be different to, right, we'll come back to, might be different to, let's say, a donkey who is carrying a pack, right, on its back, which might not be considered to be a tzoros. That might be considered to be the animal itself. In fact, it is, right? So let's, maybe we'll have to discuss why exactly that is, but let's come back to that.
If the owner had tied the string on, couldn't that be regarded as formal? If that wasn't a natural thing, or we're just saying it...
In what way? What do you mean he tied it on?
Let's say, for sake of argument, the chicken was tied so it wouldn't run away. And then then it started walking.
Right.
Okay, and naturally it wouldn't have a piece of string on it.
Right.
If the owner had knowingly tied something for whatever reason,
it should be worse or better?
It should be forewarned. Because that is not the normal way that a chicken would go around. Either there's something attached to its leg. If it's not forewarned, then it's forewarned.
You're saying here that chickens are always forewarned.
Let me just clarify. When I say forewarned, is forewarned how they translate muad?
Right, is it a natural consequence of what you think would happen?
Yeah.
Okay, that's forewarned.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but you're positing an example where actually it's an unusual thing. So you wouldn't expect it to be forewarned. You wouldn't expect to find a chicken training a kettle down the road.
Yeah, but if you had put that chicken into that position, which is unusual, I mean, you seem to be talking about something that is unexpected, not that is expected.
So it's not forewarned.
Well, the owner should be aware that if he has created an additional potential danger, the owner is forewarned.
But that's why they're liable.
Fully liable.
No, liable half damages because it's something to be, it's something that's
indirect damage.
Yeah, correct. It's indirect. It comes under again.
But I'm saying this should be direct damage.
Because
you shouldn't have tied the string around it.
That doesn't make it direct. That makes it. You're saying despite the fact that it's indirect, it should be
yeah.
It should be something that they
because it was negligent. Why create an additional, shall we say, width of wherever the chicken's walking by virtue of the fact something is attached to it?
Yeah, but again, the just to be this is. I mean, in fact, to take your example, right, it was something which was very much unexpected, right, which wouldn't have been expected to happen.
Steinsatz translates the lil as a fine thread.
Okay. Although again, Rashi says we skipped this Rashi, the one about five lines from the end says kol davar shenikshar beregel hatarnagol kari delil. So anything that you would tie onto the leg of the chicken would be considered a delil. Right, so maybe it could be fine thread, I said a bucket, probably because I must have had a half of it, because Rashi at the end says, "V'is de kari deli, de garsi deli." Some have it printed as deli, which does mean a bucket. So maybe that was why, like a sort of a utensil. So yes, I think delil probably more better translates to fine thread or some sort of string. But as I say, Rashi's point is that anything that's attached to the chicken's leg is going to be considered indirect, considered to be this indirect thing. Okay, and his argument is that the owner should have known. It's true that the owner knew it was there, but again, you weren't expecting it to cause any damage like that, right? You wouldn't. In all these cases, it's there's always have two sides to the story, in a sense, right? You always have the ability to say, you know, I did know. We're not talking about any case where you were intending to cause damage, or it was so incredibly obvious that damage was going to be caused. Okay. So let's dive into the Gemara itself. Okay, and get into this this concept of Tzroros. We'll get into in a little bit. Very, very important concept, both for Bava Kamma and just more generally, you know, very interesting Gemara concept in and of itself. Omar le Ravina la Rava. So this is from the top of 17b. Omar le Ravina la Rava. Hainu regel, hainu behema. The question that we were bothered with right at the beginning of the Mishnah, when we said the regel muetes le shaber b'derech hilucha, right? An animal's leg is normal to break something as it walks. Behema, the same thing, right? An animal or an animal's leg. What's the difference, right? An animal's leg or an animal. We're saying basically the same thing. So Omar Lay, it's important to remember that this is a conversation between two people, because we'll have it as a sort of almost a semi-story between Ravina and Rava. So Ravina asks, why, you know, aren't they the same thing? So Rava is now responding, Tana Avos, Oktani told us. It was teaching it separately because one is the Av and one is the Tolda, right? The Av is when it does it with its leg, and the Tolda is when it does it with another piece of its another part of its body, right? Another part of its body is still considered to be liable, right? Still considered to be the same thing, still considered to fall under the category of Regel, right? And as we said right at the beginning of chapter 1, we said some of the Toldas are similar, right? We went through that whole, we had a long thing at the beginning saying, are Toldas similar or not? And we brought some cases in the Torah where they were, right? In Shabbat, we said that they're very similar to the Ovos. I think in Tumah, we said they're very different to the Ovos. And very helpfully, we said in Nezek, some are similar and some are different, right? So this is one of the cases that's very similar, right? To where an animal is causing damage with another part of its body, as it's walking, normal way to walk. So for instance, if it knocks something with its hind quarters, you know, as it's walking along, that's different to stepping on it as it walks. Or knocks it with its with its snout or something as it's going, with its nose, with its mouth. Then again, that would be considered to be a tolda, and that's what it means. Behema mu'edes l'shanem b'derech hilucha. So that's the difference between the two. So Ravina now responds, okay, that's very good. Thank you for your answer. But ela meyata, if that's how you're interpreting it, so then sefer, this is a later Mishnah, right? The next Mishnah, which we haven't got to, dekatani hashen mu'edes. But it also follows a similar pattern. So the following Mishnah seems to follow a similar pattern, where it starts off saying Shein Muad Le'echol Asaroila, I think is the phrase, right? To eat what's normal for it, and then it continues to say Habahema Muedes Le'echol Asaroila, right? Ketzad Hashein Muedes Le'echol Asaroila, right? To eat what's normal for it, and again Habahema Muedes Le'echol Peres V'Yirokos, etc. So what's the difference over there? That Shein and Behema. Right, it also sounds like the same thing, right? If you're eating, if the animal's eating with its mouth, or if the behemoth is eating, you know, any other way, or consuming any other way. My avos or my toldos, what's the difference? It's the same thing. My avos or my toldos, sticker, right? We're talking about eating either way. There's no av and there's no tolda. And Rashi explains, leka lamein, but dehaida tana behemoth muedes le'echol peros v'yirokos. You can't say that is considered to be a tolda, right? The second clause of the later Mishnah, where it says an animal is considered to be normal to eat fruit and vegetables. Why? Because the Hainu Shein Mamash, because that is exactly what Shein is. The definition of Shein is an animal eating fruits and vegetables. So what's the So what exactly told the Shein Hanu Nishakha Bakosa Lahanasa, a subcategory of Shein is where an animal intentionally rubs itself against the wall in order to benefit from scratching the itch and then knocks down the wall as a result of it. Right? So it's where it gains benefit. That the subcategory of Shein is where it gains benefit. But that's not what the Mishnah describes there. The Mishnah talks about two cases of eating. It's the same thing. You know, it sounds very, very similar. So what exactly is the difference over there? So if the answer, we'd have expected the answer to be the same over here and over there, basically. Our Mishnah, which has two repetitive phrases, and the later Mishnah, which has two repetitive phrases, we'd have thought that the answer would be the same. So Rava's answer works over here. One is an av and one is a tolda, but over there it doesn't work. So that's Ravina's response. Okay? So to that, my tolda, Ika, have a come hadrele. So this is where you bear in mind that we're talking about a conversation. And Rava generally was known for in other places in the Gemara. You also find that Rava has quick witted lines. So his response over here is, this is now the fifth line down. Have a come hadrele bibdichus. So he responded in jest va'omarle as follows: Anashanai Chada, right? I answered the first question, right? You asked me a question, I answered that one. V'atshani Chada, so now you can answer the second question, right? You've asked a second question, I got the first one, you get the second one. So that's how Rashi interpreted it. Others interpreted it in a bit more of a technical way, less of a joke, but it says in the Gemara that it was bishok, right? Bibdichus, in a joking way. So he says, I answered the first one, you answered the second one. Okay, but bottom line is there's got to be an answer. For time of mice, and now we're going to figure it out ourselves. What exactly is the reason why the second Mishnah has this repetitive phrase, Shein Muedes, and then Behemu Muedes, repeating the same, basically the same case? So Omar Ravashi, Tana Shein de Chaya, Uktani Shein de Behema. One is considered to be a shein of a chaya, shein of a behema. The consumption that happens from, there's two different types of animals in the Torah. Not a very common thing we come across, but the difference between a chaya and a behema. So the way that we generally translate it is a wild animal versus a domesticated animal versus a wild animal. It's not a great translation in the modern context, because, so for instance, a horse, horses, cows, sheep, you know, we're all considered to be domesticated animals. I guess, you know, they are still, you do find wild horses, I guess. And there might be different types of these animals, actually. There are those who say that there are certain types of those in the cow family, you know, certain types of buffalo or whatever, different types of things which are considered to be wild oxen, you know, which might consider to be fall under the higher category rather than the behemoth category. And again, it doesn't mean some of them are kosher and some of them are kosher, non-kosher in both contexts, right? So, for instance, a deer, right? A deer would be considered to be a chaya, right? A more wild animal, non-domesticated. I think it basically means, you know, they don't tend not to be used, you know, farm animals or anything like that. So a deer would be considered to be a wild animal, but it's kosher, right? Deer is kosher. But the point over here is that the Torah seems to distinguish, or at least the source in the Torah, referring to Shein, is referring to a Chaya, right? It seems to be referring to a Chaya for whatever reason, or that's at least the way we understand that, and therefore the Mishnah explicitly has a second clause where it says Behema Muedas as well, right? So it's not the ones an oven, ones a tolda. They're both considered to be obvious. It's really the same thing. The Mishnah is just going out of its way to explicitly say or remind us that both a chaya and a behema, all the different types of animals, are still liable for this Shein type of damage, which in and of itself is an interesting thing that one might think otherwise. You know, that you would distinguish between the two. Usually, when you have distinctions, they're distinctions for a reason. You know, you don't just distinguish for the sake of it. You know, you don't say that the Torah says an animal is liable for care and damage, which is only if they're brown, right? If they're white animal, then they're exempt, right? There's no reason to distinguish between brown animals and white animals. It's just a meaningless distinction in this context. So a chaya and a behema, one might think, is also somewhat meaningless. Or you could say that the wild animal's more likely to, right? The wild animal's more likely to. If that's the case, then what you're really saying is that is that the behema might be more exempt, right? All of this is only in what we call the havamina. All of this is in the theoretical, because in practice the Mishnah explicitly says, again based on Torah Shabbat Apo, which we'll see, that all types of animals, behema, chaya, all of them are going to be liable for the shein penalty, and the Mishnah simply spelling that out, and that's why we have the two different clauses. Okay.
Why couldn't that be the answer to the first
one? To our Mishnah, because that doesn't work here. Because regel, why would you say regel? You mean regel of a chaya and regel of a behema?
Yeah.
I think because there's no reason to say that. My sense is that from the verse that deals with shein seems to be talking about a chaya, but the verse that deals with regel doesn't seem to be dealing with that. Again, why you would distinguish is a good question, but there's no reason to think that. And also, again, I think the better answer is that that's a more difficult answer. You always go with the simpler answer rather than the more difficult answer. I think the more obvious answer is the fact that you have ovis and toldus, right? The sort of primary categories and subcategories. When the chaya behema answer leaves you a little bit, or certainly leaves more to be explained. I think leaves more to be explained. Let me just confirm that is actually what it's. I'm pretty sure that's why. Oh yeah, sorry. I was going to say, let me just check that it's based on that verse. So the Gemara goes on to explain. Sorry, that's the Gemara. So let's just continue in the Gemara. The time of my, we said Omar Rav Ashi. It's about 7-8 lines down now. Omar Rav Ashi, Tana Shein Dechaya, Tani Shein Debehema. You distinguish between the two. Sal Kadaita Chamina. Right, what might I have thought? So here the Gemara explains. Veshilach Es Ba'iro Kasiv. It says, I got it the wrong way around. Veshilach Es Ba'iro Kasiv. That it's, it says, Veshilach Es Ba'iro, you send your. Rashi says Be'iro is basically a translation of, it's another word for behema, right, for that type of animal. And since it says over there Shilach es Be'iro, that's referring to shein type of damages. Shilach es Be'iro uvier bisnei acher, and consume something. That's the conclusion of that verse, or the continuation of that verse in Parashat Mishpatim, right, where basically everything of Bava Kama comes from, and it consumes in someone else's field. That's the source for the liability of shein. That's referring to a behema. And therefore, so I got it the wrong way around, excuse me. Vashilach es be'iroksiv, behema in chayalo. You might have thought, therefore, that a domesticated animal would be liable. A chaya would not be liable, kamash malan. And therefore, the Mishnah clarifies that. So it's interesting, kamash malan, de chaya bechalal behema. That at least in this context, they are both included. So I think that's what I was trying to say before, is that it's interesting that you might have thought that a chaya would not be included. If anything, you'd have said the wild animal was more likely to be liable rather than the, if you take your more wild animal, your less domesticated animal into someone else's field and it eats their crops, you'd have said you're more likely to be liable than taking your more domesticated animal into that field. So potentially you'd have said, So you could simply say that it's not the liability of shein that would be different. It might be the exemption of shein that would be different. I.e., shein is exempt in a public place, right? That if you're walking your animal in the street and it eats something, then you're not considered to be liable. So if you're walking your cow down the road and it eats something that's sitting in the public domain, then you're not considered to be liable for that. That's one of the exemptions of shein. So you might have thought that a chai, if you're walking your horse down the road, that wouldn't have followed. Kamash manon, again, they're considered to be equivalent, again, based on this verse. I think that's at least how I've understood it on a superficial level for now. Okay. So, let's see if we find a good stopping point, and then we'll just try and summarize and make sure we've all got it clear. Moshilach es biro, ksiv behema in. It's good to get this back and forth between Rava and Ravina, to keep the flow going. So Ihachi, if so. Now again, going on to the about the 10th line or so. Ihachi, homi boile le misne bereisha. Right, it should have put it the other way around. Haida asya le. So again, it should have put it the other way around, i.e. what? It should have put Behema first, and then Shane afterwards, right? It should have put the one that was, the one that's explicit in the verse. You'd have expected that one to be the first one in the Mishnah, not the second one in the Mishnah. The order was, it said, Shane, Muedes, etc. Behema, Muedes, etc. Behema, we said, was the one that was included in the verse. Shane is there referring to a Chaya, which is not included in the verse. Which one would you expect to be there first? You'd expect it to start off with the one that's explicit, and then to tell you the surprising factor, right? The Chiddush, right? What it's trying to tell you.
This is what Rabbi Yishmael says.
Which is what?
When talking about go from the major to the minor in the interpretation.
That's true, yeah, from major to minor. But again, I don't know if this one's major or minor. The point is over here, one's more explicit than the other one, right? One is in the verse and one is not in the verse. So here, I think it's a beautiful answer, actually. Very interesting answer. And maybe you could, again, there's a lot you could say on this. But it says, Haida asya le midrasha chavivole, right? That which we... learn out from a drasha, right? Which we figure out, as it were, or we extrapolate from our Torah Shebaal Peh, effectively, you know, from sort of delving into the using the methods of Rabbi Yishmael and others as well, using the methods to plumb the depths of what's written in the Torah. Those things are chaviv alei, right? They're dearer to us. And the reason they're dearer to us is because you worked harder on them, right? Because in a sense, it's less explicit, less obvious, right? Sometimes when you work really hard to try and understand something, you remember that much better, right? When something's just written very obviously, then it's just written very obviously. It's there, black and white. But when you actually try and figure something out for yourself, then that's always a little bit more dear. So that's what the Gemara says. You add on. That's why that came first, right? Ihachi, Reisha Nami, Lisni, Hahidelo Ksiva Bereisha. So it says, then we should do the same thing with our Mishnah, right? In our Mishnah, one is written and one is not written, right? Regel is clearly written in the Torah. The Tolda of Regel, right? The subcategory is not written explicitly in the Torah, right? It's a subcategory, right? So that's not explicitly written. This is similar to the question David was asking before, but over here it's a little bit. This is just more in the order rather than the reasoning. So the Gemara responds, and then we'll get now to a good place to pause and consider. Deluxe version, Hachi Hashta. Right, that's not a fair comparison. The Gemara says, Hachi Hashta is not a fair comparison. Why? Hasam. Idi v'idi ovos. In that Mishnah, the next Mishnah, Shane, Behema, that's the both of them are considered to be ovos, so they're on the same level. Okay, but here ninhu. Hach da asya le midrasha chavivale. So once you are talking about the same level, once you're talking about both of them being the primary category, then we put the one that's derived and that's expounded, that one's the dearer. What's a fascinating animal? I wonder what that is. That is the dearer of the
domesticated.
Yeah, apparently. Gosh, wonder what that. Is that what it is? Wow, it's an owl. Yeah, there we go. Okay, that's the deer of the two, and therefore we put that first. Then the Tahocha Shavik. Yeah, so as a hocha shovik av toni tolda, right? Does it make sense to leave behind the av, to leave behind the primary category, and then teach the secondary category, the subcategory? Or we can suggest a different reason why we don't swap the order around in our Mishnah, and that is Aidi desalik miregel. Get rid of this whole discussion, right? Which is Aidi desalik miregel pasach beregel, since it left off with regel, i.e. the end of the. This is basically undoing the entire part that we've just done until now, which is since the previous Mishnah, or I guess it's not really undoing all of it, since the previous Mishnah at the end of the first chapter left off dealing with Regel, so that's why we start our Mishnah dealing off with Regel, i.e. we said that's a direct quote from the previous, or more or less a direct quote from the previous Mishnah, and therefore that's why it's included it in That's why it started off with that, exactly. That's why it started off with that line and went on to talk about Behemoth afterwards. Okay. All right. Any questions, comments, thoughts before we? Okay. So we have got, so from this section of the Mishnah, we've basically, all we've really established is this idea that that one is considered to be the primary category, one's considered to be the secondary category. A lot of what we talked about was really on the second Mishnah, which we haven't got to, a little bit later on, about Shane, and, excuse me, and also to point out we're talking about full liability in both cases. Okay, we're talking about full liability in both cases. We haven't got to any of the Chatzi Nezek issues that we had in our Mishnah. That's going to come along now.
But that also we have to be careful to make sure that we understand that, you know, that you can construe the Avot as being, as there's a two-stage construction. But first of all, you've got to decide whether or not what you're looking at is a primary category or a secondary category.
Right.
And the difference here is we're learning something about the difference between secondary categories and primary categories.
Which is,
we learned that actually both with Regel, the primary category is both a domesticated and an undomesticated animal.
Right. Okay, interesting. But that's true of Shane as well, isn't it?
And true of with Shane, it's true. With Regel, we looked at the example with Regel, and we found that actually mere trampling is covered.
Right.
But actually, the knock-on consequences of trampling is not necessarily a primary category, but a secondary category.
No, the secondary consequences is later on. That secondary consequence is going to be the Chatzi Nezek. We're talking about the subcategories and not the secondary consequences. The subcategories are doing it in a different way, with a different part of your body, different part of the animal's body, I think, unless I'm mistaken, that's how I understood it. I think that when we say the behemoth, Tana Obas, Rashi says, so this is now the second Rashi, it's the second Rashi at the top, says Tana Obas Regel Mamash Shadarasa Baraglag. So wait, I'm sorry, everyone has to turn back and forth to get to the Rashis. But the second Rashi at the top says that what are the primary categories and the subcategories that we're dealing with here? So the primary categories is regel mamish shedor sabaragleh, where the animal uses its leg, or doesn't actively use its leg, but its leg is the one that causes the damage through its stepping on something. V'seifa, Tani told us in the second part, which is dealing with subcategories, habahema muedes lahalech kedarko l'shaber. Read that quickly because it's not. Begufa, what is that with? Begufa, with its body, with another part of its body, so with its hindquarters or with something else. Ubisara, with its hair or something, you know, its hair got caught in something. Ubishlif she'oleha, derech hilucha, right? Or the, I think that literally means the saddle that's on top of it, right? Or any other part. And again, why that's different to the tarnagol, right, to the chicken, which has something attached to its leg. I think, to me, that's somewhat obvious, or intuitive, I should say, more than obvious. I think that's intuitive in the sense that when we're talking about donkeys or horses or cows, things like that, you know, they tend to have things on them, you know, it's normal for it to have a bit in its mouth or a saddle on its back or a pack on its back, you know, that's considered to be a part of the animal. Therefore, that's what it's referring to, the subcategories, I think. Does that make sense? So that's a little bit different. The secondary categories is something different. So just to go back to the Mishnah, right, just to see it within the context of the Mishnah, there's the first two lines, Ketzad HaRegel Muedes, how is the leg, right, or the leg damages, Muedes considered to be, how does it work? Muedes, it is considered to be muad, right, considered to be forewarned, or whatever the word we're going to use, it's ready, it's prepared, leshaber b'derech hilucha, to break something as it walks. And then we said again, habahema, seems very repetitive, the animal is muedes lehalech kederka or leshaber, it is muad, it is forewarned, prepared, ready to walk in its normal way and to break things. And again, that would be considered to be full damages. That's not That's not indirect damages. That's very much direct. It's just then that was why our Mishnah was trying to figure out. Our Gemara was trying to figure out what is the difference between those two statements, and it simply said that one is considered to be the Av, one is considered to be the Tolda, and we put the Av first, we put the Tolda second, and we got more and used that as a springboard to again to figure out what exactly was going on in the next Mishnah, Shein and Behemoth as well, and that couldn't be both of us and Tolda. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So yeah. So now we're going to get into the secondary damages, right? Into the more indirect stuff. That's going to come now. Okay. So that first part is still very direct. Still very direct. It's just an animal that's causing damage. Direct damage with its hair, with its body, with some other part. You know, with its head, whatever it is. It knocks into something with its head as it's walking. A normal walking. Okay. Fine. Tonu Rabbono. This is, you should have a full stop. I've got a full stop there if it's helpful to have a full stop. So it's about, probably about 15 lines down in Yud Zayin 17b. Tonu Rabbono. Behema Muedes Lahalech Kedarka. Again, same line. This animal is considered to be normal to walk along. When it's normally walking along L'Shaber, then that You'll pay full damages. I mean, I'm adding in a lot of words, but the Gemara goes on to explain what exactly is going on. So here, Kate said, how does this work? Behema shenichnasa lechotzer hanizak. You have an animal which goes into the chotzer hanizak, the courtyard of the person who will ultimately have damage caused to them. Right. So this is party B. Right now, assuming you're party A, you own the animal, and it's now gone into someone else's courtyard, someone else's field, and vehizika causes damage begufa. Derech hilucha causes damage with its body, right? Derech hilucha, in the normal way it's walking. It didn't go for it on purpose. It wasn't gaining particular benefit from causing this damage. It just did it as it was walking, right? Uvisara derech hilucha, or with its hair. Derech hilucha over ukuf she'aleha. So maybe ukuf is the saddle, and the shlif maybe is the where have I got all my translations over here? So we've got
saddlebag, they say.
Oh, saddlebag, yeah, masa. Okay, yeah, very good. The pack, exactly. So shlif is the pack on its back. Uba frumbia, I think shebapia, that's the bit in its teeth, in its mouth. Uba zug shebatsavar on the bell, right, that's round its neck. So again, all of that, vachamar b'maso'o, or a donkey with its pack, again, with whatever it's carrying on its back. Meshalem nezek shalem. So all of those, again, pay full damages. That's all considered to be direct damage, very much a part of the animal itself, even though it's attached to it. And again, similarly, it's not exactly the same thing, because when we get to human damages, it's a little bit different. But again, human damages, again, is going to be clothing. Well, there's many contexts in which what a person is wearing... And in Shabbat, actually, you know, you find these Mishnahs in Shabbos where the Mishnah talks about Bame Behema Yotza, Bame Isha Yotza. What exactly can you go out with when you're talking about outside of an Eruv, right? How can, well, an animal going out is a slightly different thing. But let's say a person, right, deals with a woman because it's talking about jewellery. But what type of jewellery is considered to be not carrying, is considered to be worn, and what type is considered to be extraneous, right? It's considered to be something extra, in a sense, that's sort of hanging off your secondary. It's like a little bit further removed. So over here, similarly, clearly, we've listed these as parts of the animal. They're considered to be so much a part of the animal, in the same way that our clothes, right, considered to be just a part of who we are, at least while we're wearing them, obviously. Okay. So now we're okay. So that's Tonu Rabbono Behemoth. So it explains all of those sorts of things, and again, all of that is considered to be direct damage. Full stop. Now we've got Sumchus. Sumchus, very important. Okay, Sumchus says as follows. Sumchus is a very important opinion, and this is going to be take up a decent amount of our time now figuring out what exactly Sumchus is saying and what's the distinction. And Sumchus says as follows. Sumchus Omer. Tsroros, tsrorot, right, literally pebbles, vachazir shehoya nover ba'ashba, or a pig that was digging around, right, in the rubbish, right, that was searching, scavenging, that's the word I was looking for, scavenging for food, ba'ashba in the rubbish, vahizik and it caused damage as a result of that. Mashalim nezik shonim, hizik pshita. Right? What do you mean? That's very obvious. What do you mean? If it caused damage, of course it's going to be liable. Right? Like any other thing. So what exactly is Sumchos telling us? Ela ema, rather, this is what it means. Hitiz v'hizik. If while it was rummaging around, right, while it was scavenging, then something flew out. Hitiz v'hizik, and that thing that flew out, that's what caused damage. Mishalim nezik shalom. Then hitiz v'hizik. Mishalim nezik shalom. That's what it was referring to. So tsroros man docher shmei. What exactly is the word tsroros doing there? Right, we said if you read it, it just doesn't make any sense. Literally, we said sumchas omer tsroros. Full stop. Right, we don't know whether that's what they're paying, what they've done, what their cause, or exactly is why did we include that word at all? Right, what's it got to do with anything? And then we said this pig which was rummaging around and his it caused damage, or we then clarified that to be referring to it something flew out, it knocked something out and caused damage as a result. So it's rummaging around the rubbish, this pig, and it knocks out some piece of rubbish, which then goes and breaks a vase as a result. Right, some heavy bone or something it knocks out, and it causes damage as a result of that. So that's
Chatzi Nezek.
Yeah, Mazrachan. Yeah, it is interesting. It is interesting.
Wandering around at the time observable in their activities.
It's a good question. I mean, I didn't see anyone talk about it. Yeah, I didn't see anyone talk about it. You mean yeah? I don't know. It's unusual. Why would you be raising? Why would you be raising? Why would you be raising pigs? Right? Why would you have them?
The notes here say pigs rummage as part of their eating habits.
No, that's true. But the question is, we're talking about the owner. We're talking about here the liability of the owner.
But he's acting normally. The pig is acting normally by rummaging. Another animal might not be acting normally.
We could have come up with other. Other animals, or ways in which they might have caused. In fact, that's not exactly what we're going to do. We're going to have other context, other types of animals causing indirect damage. It's an interesting question. Why exactly we're talking about that? I'm not sure. Don't know.
In the early days of Israel, they didn't call them pigs; they called them zebra.
Is that true?
Yes.
They nicknamed them zebra.
Really.
You mean to avoid using the word?
Yeah, sure.
Really?
Oh, really?
Sure. That went on for several years.
Wow. Don't they still call, they have a euphemism when they talk about bacon, then they still call it basar lavan, call it that? Right? White meat. Yes, it's just sort of like, you can't talk about, I don't know if that's bacon or one of the others or whatever it is. Yeah, pork or something. Whichever one of them. Anyway. Okay. So, hello.
Hello.
Oh, you're going out.
Plug it into solution. Let's plug it in now. I have to remember it. So. See, baby monitor in. Yes, not to be confused with the owl. There you go, green light on. Okay.
How is the baby?
She is 7 months, nearly 7 months.
Maybe it's because it's quite a confusing category, because is a pig's rooting around, is that regular?
Oh, okay, so that's also a good question, which I was going to avoid for now, because it sort of adds a layer of complication. It clearly is Shane, right? It's clearly going to be a subcategory, or not a subcategory, an indirect consequence of Shane, right? It's the other types of throwers that we're going to talk about are very much... or the ones that the Mishnah referenced, right? It talks about what did it say? I can't remember the exact.
Direct, right?
Doros alakli. Yeah, exactly. It stepped on one utensil, broke that, and then a piece of that fell onto a second utensil. So we said you pay full damages for the first one. The second one you don't. The first is clearly regel, right? Exactly. And Tsroros, we're going to talk about pebbles, right? Being knocked around is clearly going to be. Exactly, a result of regal. So that's a separate point. I think there are those who pick up on that. Well, if we have time, let's come back to. Or maybe it's. I think it's this Tosus over here. I guess that's not. It's this middle Tosus, I think, over here. Oh, maybe that's why, actually. Oh, so maybe this answers Andy's question. This fourth Tosas down basically says, Vafelgav the Tana Tsuros de Regel, usually we're going to talk about Tsuros de Regel, Ashma'in and Tsuros de Shein, Lahana Osaka of it, right? It's trying to go out of its way to point out what Phil's saying, which is that you can have Tsuros of Shein as well, right? You can have this indirect damage caused by Shein as well, that both of them would be liable less liable, I guess, but also somewhat liable for these indirect damages. Okay, so it's a good point to be made. Thank you. Okay, either way, we're still stuck with this word of Tsuros in Sumchas' statement, right? The word Tsuros seems to be, we've jumped to the less common category, actually, the less common type of thing, as we said, you know, the pig rummaging around in the rubbish. But what exactly does the word Tsuros have to do with anything? Ela imahitiz vehizik, let me just find where we're up to. Nezik shana Tsuros mandocha shmaihu chasure mechsra. Great phrase, great Gemara phrase. Chasure mechsra literally means, eight lines before the wide lines. So if you get to the wide lines, it's about eight lines up from there. And chasurei mechzor v'hochi katani, chasurei mechzor literally means it's missing words, and we do that with Mishnayot all the time, or brises, where it says, you know, it's talking in very shorthand, right? The Mishnayot were written generally to be a little bit cryptic. It was the first time Torah Shabbat Al Peh, oral law was written down in any form, and it was written down in a very shorthand form, in a very sort of heading and bullet pointed type of form. So the Gemara often has to fill in some of the details. It's just sort of throwing out a word here or there, but it's very much missing often the key parts of the sentence of what exactly it's talking about.
Is the reason for the sparing use of the language,
yes,
to prompt you to have to discuss and debate it, because it's a Torah Shabbat.
The Gemara never says that explicitly, but later sources talk about the fact that generally Torah Shabbat Al-Peh has become more and more explicitly written down over time, and even the Gemara is quite spare in the way it writes things, or quite. It's not just spare; it's quite difficult to do without. Without a bit of guidance and without having to go to someone who has been through it and who has a tradition for it. And yes, later authorities talk about that being intentional.
Half the problem is complete lack of punctuation.
Right.
You sometimes don't know where the sentence is and when you're starting the new sentence.
Maybe. The words are quite good at punctuating. The words are quite good at punctuating it. Yeah, sometimes you do. When you learn the words, it tends to, you tend to sort of get a good sense of where it's going. But anyway, chasurei mechzor v'hochi ketani, it's missing words, and this is what it really should say. Tsroros ki ur chayhu chatzi nezek. So, if it knocks out pebbles in a, I think it literally means in a normal way, ki ur chayhu, they translate it over here as, basically as it's walking, right? If it's going normally, traveling normally, and it has these pebbles which are knocked out as a result, then those cause damage, then that's chatzi nezek, you pay half damages. V'chazir, or a pig, shahaya nover ba'ashpa, which is rummaging around in the rubbish, v'hitiz v'hizik, m'shalim chatzi nezek. Again, so we've added in a few words, and basically it's similar, but as Phil pointed out, one is talking about regel, and one is talking about shein, and that was what, and again, all of these we've said have chatzi nezek, on their half damages. In the earlier statement, Simcha said there were full damages. So don't worry, Simcha's coming on the scene now. Simcha's disagrees. So we've said that the Tanakama, right, the unnamed opinion, the standard opinion is that it's Chatzi Nezek, you're paying half damages for both the Tsroros, the pebbles being knocked out, and for the pig rummaging around and knocking something out as a result. The Sumchas now disagrees. Sumchas says, this is five lines from the wide lines. Sumchas amatsroros vechazir, both of those cases, Shahoya Nova Ba'ashpa Vehitis Vehizik Meshalim Nezek Sholem. He says those pay full damages. So full damages. So that's very, very different to the context of our Mishnah. So that Brisa explains that really the implication is that Suchas is going to disagree with our Mishnah as well. Our Mishnah, which said an animal was sat down on a vessel, right? Broke it, and then that vessel then went and fell and broke another one. Simchas will probably disagree with that. He would say that the second you'd be liable for both. You'd be liable for full damages for both. He doesn't seem to be bothered with the indirect nature of it. Point number one. Point number two. Even as I'm reading this, actually, so although Tosfos does agree with Phil, I do think there's room to disagree actually, and to say that this is not just about the pig eating. Yes, it's true, it's eating, but we're talking about it rummaging. So in a sense, while it's rummaging, that is a normal type of movement, right? Normal type of movement, and that normal type of movement is what caused something to be knocked and caused second damage. So you could also argue that would be regular as well. But as we said, Tosfos does say that is a toldo of Shane, a subcategory of Shane. And finally, I think key point over here, which everyone jumps on, it's not really in the Gemara at all, but I think Rashi says it over here, and if Rashi says it, well, then we'll use this as an opportunity to also speak about it briefly. Let's see if I can find it. Oh, no, I think it's a little bit later on, actually. Where is this? Now, the truth is, I think it's going to be a little bit later on when we talk about what exactly, where is the source for this. What's the time? Let's see if we have time. 25 past. Okay, when we get, I can't find this Rashi. I think it might be a little bit later on. But when we talk about this source for Tzoros doesn't seem to be this exemption of indirect damages. You don't seem to find it anywhere in the Torah. So I think Rashi says it's what we call a halacha l'moshe misinai, which is literally a sort of a tradition handed down. Right, it was given orally to Moshe at Sinai and handed down from one generation to the next, and doesn't actually have a source. So there's very interesting. So if that's the case, it's very interesting that there's a debate on this content on this, because well, the Rambam explicitly says that on a halacha l'moshe misinai you can never have a debate, right? Usually, this is like a much bigger discussion. Actually, we once gave a shiur on this a long time ago. I think when I first came to Pinna, but it was a very big topic. Exactly why do we have so many debates, right? How exactly does that work? If these laws were were given at Sinai, so what exactly where did the room for debate come in, right? Like what was missing in a sense, where was the point? So some things are more understandable than others. Obviously, some of them are based on rabbinic laws, right? Some of them are breakdown of tradition, transmission. Thank you, better not tradition, breakdown of transmission. But again, the challenge with saying. We're wary of saying a simple breakdown in transmission altogether, because if once you say breakdown in transmission, then it throws into question the entire transmission. So there are certain things which we're quite wary of saying.
Stories, for instance, about time when Hillel was the only one that knew, remembered what.
That's true with your
sacrificing on Shabbat.
Right. Yeah, there are certain things. A little bit. Yeah. So there are certain Gemaras. As I say, it's an interesting big discussion. But that particular phrase of Halacha L'moshe Misinai, I think Tzoros. I thought it was here, but obviously I'm mistaken. I'll try and find it again. There's a big discussion on this particular topic, because the Rambam says. The Rambam says that on a halacha l'moshe misinai you can never have a debate, because the whole definition, in a sense, of a halacha l'moshe misinai is that we have a tradition going back from Moses at Sinai, handed down, that this is what happens.
It also has to be looked at context. When Moshe received at Sinai, what are we talking about? In a desert, no society as such in terms of houses and animals domesticated and otherwise.
Why not?
It's just something in a vacuum that would have no meaning because it couldn't relate to anything.
No, not at all. It was very much a society. What, and then why was it...
It wasn't not in the sense of that we know we talk about fields and ownership and so on.
They had animals, they had tents, they had all sorts of...
But they didn't have public places and private places.
Sure they did.
What, in the desert?
Yeah, the camp. What do you mean? That's what the entire camp was. That's what Moses was dealing with judgments all the time. There were people who were coming. That was what Yisro wrote. That's what his father-in-law said. How can you spend all your time dealing with all these questions that are coming to you? You need to set up a system where it's not just you who's having to answer the question. You need to empower judges, you know, other judges who are going to be able to deal with all the other questions that come along. Yeah, you're sure, for sure it changes the principles change, you know, not the principles, the
location.
Yeah, the look, and then the style, right? The ideas change. This is but the principles are always always the same. I mean, in totally separate context, I was just reminded of this recently. In totally separate context, Rav Schechter, teacher of mine, was I heard him talking recently about COVID. Someone was talking about COVID, you know, and we always use the phrase unprecedented, you know, and so different. And I just heard him almost casually referring. Someone talked to him about the fact that he answered so many, you know, new questions, unprecedented questions in COVID. He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "If there had been new questions, he said, I would never have had time to answer them all." He said, "They're all the same old questions. It's all the same old things coming up again." You know, there have been communities that haven't had minyanim for a long time. He said, you know, the idea of electronics, you know, and microphones and all that has been going for decades. You know, all these things. He was sort of saying, basically, it's all the sort of same stuff. You're just plugging it into a slightly different context. It looks a little bit different. The unit as a whole, obviously, for us was very unprecedented. But it was very fascinating to hear that perspective. He was basically saying, you know, you're just sort of taking the same principles that you're always applying. Anyway.
Is it too simplistic to say then that if something is not halacha l'moshe nisim, then it must have sources in the written Torah? Otherwise,
only if it's a Torah law, meaning there are other things that don't have. No. There are loads of stuff. There's stuff that's explicitly written, right?
Mefurash
b'Torah,
written in Torah.
Very few things. I mean, really, in a certain sense.
So, when something not halakha l'moshe misinai, if it's not explicit,
all the drashot, right? All the Rabbi Yishmael, you know, all the things that Rabbi Yishmael has a list of 13 things,
so
I think.
But deduced from the
correct,
Torah.
Correct, yeah. But again, but that was deduced. We're not, as my rabbi said, we're not in the business of darshaning verses nowadays, right? We don't do that. That was very much what we colloquially refer to as the age of Torah Shebaal Peh, where they did do that, and that was also based heavily on traditions of how exactly they would do that. But that's different to a halacha l'moshe misinai. A halacha l'moshe misinai is something which you can't even derive from a verse. So, for instance, we talked about Hakel, right? We talked about Hakel on Shabbat. So we're talking about Hakel on Shabbat. So you can derive from verses exactly where it would happen and when it would happen, right? The Torah doesn't explicitly say exactly when, where, how, or what, right? What exactly would be read, all those sorts of things. It doesn't explicitly say that. But that was more based on you know, deducing it from the various verses. Halacha l'moshe misinai is something like... classic halacha l'moshe misinai is the fact that tefillin are black. That's a classic one, right? Or the fact that tefillin are square. It doesn't say anywhere. There's no hint to it. There's no nothing. There's nowhere, right? There's no, and it's not, and it's not debated. There's no discussion. You never find any, you know, any debate in the Gemara as to, you know, what color tefillin should be, debate as to what color, but it's very clear that it has to be that color, right? That it's there's no discussion as can you choose, right? Or there is a debate as to what it means when it says square. So, and we're strict to try and have all the parts square, but whether the top part needs to be square or whether the base needs to be square, whether the both needs to be square, I think is more that is more debated. So we have all of the parts sort of squared up, basically. None of it should be rounded, but that's an example of.
And what would be an example of something that was had the status of halacha, but that was not the Moshe Mitzrayim?
Well, like we just said, anything else, like
no,
which is derived from, well, Kashrut, a lot of kashrut is a big topic, but you're saying the law of shechita. Okay, shechita. Milk and meat. Okay, milk and meat is a great example. Okay, so milk and meat is a great example. Because milk and meat, it says, lot of ashel gedi v'chalev imo, exactly. So what is written in the Torah is something, right? And what exactly that means in practice is based on, that's based on drush rather than halacha l'mashem yisina. That's considered to be deductions or derivations or using the principles of the fact that it's said three times, the context in which it's said. Right, the Gemara goes through and explains what exactly, how exactly we come to the conclusions of. And when I say come to the conclusions, the reality is that the conclusions were there already, right? We knew the conclusions, and we're plugging back in the verses into the. We know both.
Show how the conclusions.
Yeah, meaning when Moshe was at Sinai, Moshe was taught what's written in the Torah, right? Moshe was taught the halacha of Moshe Mishinai, which is the opposite extreme, where there's no hint to it at all, and Moshe was also taught the bottom line and how it fits back in. Right, in a sense, like the bottom line, let's say, like you say, milk and meat, the bottom line of the fact that the it's written three times in the Torah. Why is it written three times in the Torah? To prohibit eating, cooking, and benefiting. Right, that's our Torah Shabbat Al Peh. That's what the Gemara says the three times are referring to. And that is, as we say, that's not a halacha l'mashem sinai, that's based on derivations of sorts or sort of principles of figuring out from the text, because you have the principle, because you can't call that halacha l'mashem yisina, because the text says something about it, right? It clearly is getting at something to do with milk and meat, right? Whereas tefillin being black, there's no, like, well, I don't know, but it's like out of left field, as the Americans say.
Netilat
yadayim is a rabbinic, that's entirely rabbinic, yeah, it's a rabbinic mitzvah. Yeah. There's no requirement in the Torah to do that at all. Yeah, that's a rabbinic.
But well, I mean, well, how would you differentiate between the Tilat Yadayim and the fact that it's a fill in the black?
Because one's rabbinic and one's a Torah. One's a Torah requirement. Halacha l'mashem yisina is a Torah requirement.
King David, wasn't it?
Correct. It's an early rabbinic requirement. Was it King? It might have been King Shlomo. I don't remember is the answer, but it might have been King David. There are rabbinic things. It was instituted later on. They didn't do it in the desert. They did wear black, again, according to traditional Orthodox Judaism. They did wear black square tefillin in the desert. They didn't do Netilat Yadayim in the desert. That was instituted at a later date. That was something which was added on.
Are there any cases?
That's a legitimate thing. I'm gonna turn off the recording just because I feel like we've